We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not even know where he comes from. As rational creatures, we human beings put a great deal of trust in what we call knowledge, and for good reason. Knowledge helps us separate so-called facts from myths. Knowledge helps us maximize good and minimize evil. Knowledge keeps the terror of the unknown at bay. As Sir Francis Bacon once said, human knowledge and human power meet as one. The problem for Christians, however, is that since the rise of the modern period, Christian faith has not always been associated with knowledge. Our history books blithely tell us that medieval Christian culture can be summed up as the Dark Ages. And the cultural war of the Jesus fishes and the Darwin fishes seems to suggest to us that Christian faith is intrinsically anti-scientific. And when sociologists do tests on the three classic professions, law, medicine, theology, clergy always rate dead last in general knowledge. Now, there are a variety of ways we can respond to these claims. One option we are probably familiar with is to go on the defensive. If we choose, we can use our faith to file away the questions that disturb us, put them somewhere safe where we don't have to think about them. If we choose, we can say to the world, hey, doctors, lawyers, clergy, we're in the top three. What more do you want? But the other option is to go on the offensive. We can go on the offensive against our own faith. Most of us want to be rational, intelligent, perceptive human beings. We want to be the rational creatures we are, and so it's very tempting to start carving and trimming away those aspects of the Christian faith that just seem impossible or irrational or unworkable to us. And if that doesn't work, the final option is the classic capitulation. We can give up and concede that we can't believe six impossible things before breakfast, and we can assure ourselves that we're basically good people anyway, and we can enjoy a nicely folded newspaper on Sunday morning. Now, am I being a bit tongue-in-cheek? Yes, I am. And I don't mean to ridicule any of these options or the people who find comfort in these strategies, because I myself have employed every one of them. I am very comfortable and very committed to the types of knowledge I think I have about God and the world. In fact, the whole question of knowledge and faith reminds me of a beautiful story about a monk who has a most excellent name, Abba Paphnutius. Now, Abba Paphnutius was a beloved man, but he had one problem. He was what they called in the second and third centuries an anthropomorphite. He believed that God was basically a giant human being. He envisioned God in physical form, and he was very committed to this knowledge. He was secure in the faith that he had in this knowledge. But one day, a young man comes in from the city, probably a punk seminarian, and he explains to Abba Paphnutius that he's got it all wrong. God isn't a human being. God doesn't look like a human being. God is immortal, immaterial, indivisible. And Abba Paphnutius hears this, and he falls to the ground, and he cries, and he sobs, and he says, "What a wretched man I am. You have taken my God away from me. I have no one to cling to. I don't know whom to address and whom to worship." You have taken my God away from me. I don't know about you, but that line haunts me. It reveals how intimate the question of knowledge is for our life, not just as Christians, but as human beings. It reveals how much we need and desire to cling to that which we know. And I think it reveals the radical and very profound nature of our gospel passage this morning. Because our scripture passage not only demands, that we move beyond the certainties of our knowledge, religious or otherwise. Our scripture passage actually tells us that as long as we play by the rules of worldly knowledge, whether we're on the defense or the offense or we're sitting on the sidelines, we're going to miss, we're going to fail to grasp the wisdom of Jesus Christ. You see, the Jesus who comes to us today in John's gospel does not accept the idea that knowledge is merely an exercise of power or authority or even security. This Jesus doesn't believe in facts. We may have been taught in school that the world consists of these little units of information that are impartial and unbiased, and everyone can see them if you're smart enough, but that isn't true. The truth is, we don't all see the same facts. And as the great virtue ethicist Alistair MacIntyre has written, facts, like telescopes and wigs for gentlemen, are a 17th century invention. Our culture, our experiences, our presumptions about the world, they all condition the knowledge we take in and the knowledge we overlook. Common sense may suggest to us that seeing is believing, but the Gospel of John says that actually it's by believing that we see anything at all. Now, I think that's precisely what our Pharisees fail to grasp. They come to us this morning with tried and true, well-defined facts. They know that God spoke to Moses. They know they are disciples of Moses. They know Jesus is a sinner. And they know that their own knowledge gives them the authority and the ability to speak to God and for God. Even in ancient times, knowledge is still power. And yet, as our Pharisees encounter the man born blind, they start to realize the limitations of their own knowledge. Two times, they cross-examine the man born blind, and each time he confesses some aspect of his ignorance. And yet the irony of this passage, and this is the beauty of John's writing, is that every time the Pharisees become more obdurate and more convinced of what they know, they actually move farther from the truth. And every time the man born blind admits that he lacks knowledge, that his own human capacities aren't up to the task, he learns a deeper truth. He discovers a wisdom that exists in the world beyond his own limitations. He discovers a wisdom spoken by God before the foundation of the world was laid. And what's amazing about this realization is that it doesn't happen at once. It's not the kind of classic lightning bolt. It's this gradual deepening. You know, it's this moving towards insight. And John works this into the text itself. The first time the Pharisees question the man born blind, he says he thinks Jesus is a prophet. Now, a prophet's pretty good, but it fits within the well-worn categories of traditional Judaism. People know what prophets are. Elijah and Elisha are prophets. But the second time he gets questioned, he moves farther. He starts to push his categories and his knowledge to the breaking point. And he insists that somehow, in some way, Jesus is from God. Now, this is enough to make the Pharisees revile him, but it's not enough to make the breakthrough that occurs when Jesus himself comes to the man and says, "Who do you think I am?" And Jesus coaxes the man into finally breaking through the last bit of resistance. The man looks at Jesus and he falls down and he worships him as the Son of Man. And I think he worships not because he finally has the right answer, which is a tempting way of reading this passage. We can look at it and say, well, the man is just being schooled until he learns a new and better kind of knowledge, the right knowledge. But I would actually say that he falls down and worships Jesus as God because in the act of worship, he is free from the tyranny of always having to have the right answer. For the Gospel of John, this worshiping wisdom is true Christian knowledge. It's a knowledge not arrogant, not fearful, but steeped in humility and adoration before the living God. In a world that demands black and white answers and clear-cut results, the man born blind reveals to us that the purpose of Christian faith is not to reduce mystery to clarity or to win rational arguments, but to integrate the unknown and the known into a living whole. The man born blind models for us what the great Christian mystics would call a luminous obscurity, or a bright darkness, or even the most appropriate, seeing without seeing. Because at the end of the day, the man born blind is nothing less than the embodiment of Christian knowledge infused not with certainty, but with faith and love. A faith and love that shatter the boundaries of what we think we know and don't know. A faith and love fit for a God who exceeds all of our knowledge. A God who in the end promises us that even when we are blind, we shall see.